Homeless Link is the national membership charity for frontline homelessness services. We work to improve services through research, guidance and learning, and campaign for policy change that will ensure everyone has a place to call home and the support they need to keep it.
In this series of the Going Beyond podcast, we will discuss good practice in how to support individuals experiencing homelessness who have complex health and care needs. The episodes will cover dual diagnosis, physical health needs, hoarding, self-neglect, and brain injury. In each episode, we will speak to a guest who will tell us about their roles and expertise and provide practical tips for frontline staff to deliver good practice. I'm Jo Turner, National Practice Development Project Manager at Homeless Link, and I'll be your host. We hope you enjoy it. In this episode, we speak to Hannah and Fraser from P3 Charity, who work in their hoarding teams. We discuss the reasons why someone might hoard and talk about the most effective ways frontline staff can support these individuals. Hi, Fraser. Hi, Hannah. How are you both today?
Hiya. Yeah, good, thank you.
Good, amazing. So thank you so much for being here today to record for the Going Beyond podcast. So to start us off, for the listeners, can you tell us a bit about yourself and the work you do? Hannah, I'll go to you first.
Yeah, hiya. So I work for P3 Charity. I manage a couple of services in Milton Keynes, and I also manage our Bucks hoarding service.
Amazing. Thank you so much. And Fraser, I'll go to you now.
Hi, yes. So I also work for P3 Charity, and I run the hoarding service for Warwickshire.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Thanks so much for being here. So this series of the Going Beyond podcast is all about understanding the complex health and care needs that people experiencing homelessness face. So for this episode, I thought it would be interesting to understand hoarding and think about ways frontline workers can support people who hoard. When I was a frontline worker, it's not something that I really had any training on, so I really wanted to just kind of raise awareness of it. So I wanted to start by asking you both, what are the reasons why someone might hoard?
So there are various different reasons that someone might hoard, which is why it's really important to kind of give that person-centered approach when you're trying to support people. So a few reasons might be, we see quite often bereavement and grief, sometimes trauma or abuse, mental health difficulties, physical disability, sometimes brain injuries, and sometimes people might live in hoarded homes because they have some neurodivergence.
It's a really interesting condition. It's fairly new in terms of being recognised as its own disorder. It used to be recognised as part of OCD. It's only really been recognised as its own disorder since 2018 by the WHO. I think the NHS recognised it in 2013. So it's a really good idea to raise awareness. It's something that a lot of people working in floating support, a lot of people who are supporting people in housing will have come across. It affects a large amount of the population. A lot of the people we speak to generally outside of specifically hoarding will know someone who has tendencies towards this. There are loads of reasons, like Hannah says. It's usually largely a sort of web of different traumas. And really our job running the hoarding service is to sort of slowly help someone untangle those and teach new behaviours. Yeah, basically set them up so that they're not living in an environment that is unsafe or potentially really very hazardous.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting what you said about kind of the reasons behind why someone might hoard and how quite a lot of it could be to do with trauma. I don't know if you could talk a little bit more on that, Fraser, about kind of how does trauma affect hoarding? Maybe how does that develop into something that becomes an issue, I guess?
Yeah, sure. So trauma in lots of different forms has a tendency to present in different ways. Hoarding is an interesting one because when we think of people who have had troubled lives, they've had issues with abuse, you know, issues throughout childhood, we see quite a lot of destructive ways that people might express their trauma. We work with a lot of people who have issues with alcoholism, issues with drug use. Hoarding's an interesting one because it's more under the radar. You wouldn't notice. You know, we know that there are lots of people who have different traumas throughout their lives. We can't always see how that comes out. Hoarding is a condition where you are buying items potentially to fill sort of a void at points, and it can give you this comfort that you haven't had maybe. So it's a coping mechanism as much as anything.
I would completely agree. I think, as Fraser said, what we sometimes often see is that almost like a safety blanket, we see nesting. People kind of, are acquiring these items because that acquirement brings them joy and pleasure. And then they're obviously keeping them in the home. The thought of letting go or losing those items is quite distressing. And we've often find that we meet people that have built that kind of safety blanket, built that nest around them, and that provides them security. Whatever the trauma might be, as Fraser said, it can be really complex. There's various different, experiences people may have had. But sometimes they're trying to, as you said, fill that void, or sometimes it's a blockade, keeping the bad out, keeping people away from them if they've perhaps, experienced abuse or things like that. So very complex.
Yeah, it sounds incredibly complex. Like you said, with hoarding, it could be a bit like a safety blanket. So I'm just wondering how, for people who hoard or who are quite sort of happy with their situation, they don't see it as a problem, how do you then approach that conversation where maybe there's a risk of their tenancy ending, a risk of them becoming homeless? How do you approach it when to them, this is fine, this is the way I live my life and I'm comfortable in this way? Because that must be very difficult.
Yeah, it is very difficult, to be honest with you. P3 come from a stance where, people have choice. We are not here to force anyone to do anything. And that's kind of our nationwide stance, that we're here to help people, but we're not here to force people to do things. So particularly with hoarding, when we're talking about, decluttering and removing items from people's home, that can be very distressing, as we've discussed. So our approach is really to focus on, why we're here, put them in the center of it. We do a lot of kind of trauma-informed care, person-centered approaches. So put them in the middle, find out maybe what they do want. Maybe they can't sleep in their bed. And rather than focusing on decluttering the whole house, let's try and get them sleeping in their bed. So focusing on those small goals that are less daunting and hopefully more achievable for them, and just focusing on those small kind of tidbits to try and encourage them. And then we do often find that once we've got this slow approach and we've taken the time to get to know them, taken the time to understand their situation and taking it at their pace, you do often find they start to feel and see the benefits of what they've done. So we would obviously try and motivate off the benefits, kind of looking at their self-efficacy, the kind of experiences they've felt, how they've achieved that already and how that's made them feel, and try and kind of turn that into doing a little bit more, focusing on kind of things that they enjoy. Sometimes it might be that we're looking outside of the home and finding sources of enjoyment different to acquiring or having their items, and looking at that holistic approach. Perhaps they're isolated, try and reduce that. So we're looking at all the different factors that might be coming into play to try and alleviate that distress of them decluttering their home.
When we support people, I mean, Hannah's right, in terms of we would need someone to agree that this is something that they want to do. Now, a lot of the time, I've had assessments with people where it's not been the right time, and that's perfectly understandable. But a lot of the assessments we get in, it's usually because we get our assessments via sort of adult social care. So there will be a reason that they have been referred to the service. So that could be that they can't get gas repairs done, they can't get electrical repairs done. There's something that has triggered a something needs to change response. And that's usually sort of the time where we would go in and work with people. Now we can explain that with them, because while someone is living in a hoarded environment, they are usually quite understanding when it comes to things like fire safety. We work very closely with the fire service. When it comes to, potentially a fall or a trip in the house, there are realizations that actually I need to change some parts of my living. And our approach is to really build a relationship with people. And it's really, really important for us to do that. And if we can go in and work with someone focusing on the key areas that need to be change to make the home safe and livable, then over time we can potentially build this relationship and help, like Hannah said, work with them to look at their meaningful use of time, to look at ways that we can really help them declutter the whole property and, you know, have basically a better living environment and hopefully a better life, really. You know, some of the people that we work with, we are the only people they'll see in the week and things. We have great successes with people who, now that they feel, you know, comfortable to open the curtains, they're getting light in. They're just taking these small steps that seem quite easy to everyone, but actually they're huge and they take a lot of time. And as it is with hoarding, with decluttering in general, everything takes time. But it's the relationship building that we do that is really, really the key to us having success.
Yeah, it really seems like that kind of person-centered, tailored approach to every individual is kind of the way forward, and building up those relationships so people can trust you and, you know, even allow them into into their home to actually and move things around. I can imagine that could take quite a lot of time to kind of get to that point where they can kind of, yeah, trust you, I guess, to kind of be involved in their life in that way. I'm wondering also about kind of the language of kind of hoarding. And I think there's a lot of stigma behind that word. I'm wondering if kind of you've come across that at all.
Yeah, I mean, as a service, we are the hoarding service. So when we do assessments with people and we work with people, when we introduce ourselves, there is, I suppose, a slight moment where it is, how comfortable is this person with understanding that the reason we're assessing them is because they're living in a hoarded home? Do they see themselves as a hoarder? It's quite a charged word for some people. You know, when people think of hoarding, they think of quite a specific thing. You see the things on TV with people living in sort of dirty houses, places that have, you know, need environmental health to assess them. And while there are cases like that, you know, we have people who are academics. They've got a whole house full of all their life's work. Now, it could be a massive fire risk, but these are really significant things to someone. And we are coming in as outsiders saying, you know, you need to clear out. Yeah, and that's genuinely quite traumatic. So I think language is really key to what we do. I think when it comes to sort of getting rid of items, something I've always found really, really helpful as a frontline worker is to mirror the sort of language that the person you're working with uses. When people talk about throwing away, when they talk about disposing, you find people use a lot of different words. It sometimes varies on area. You know, for Warwickshire, we cover, you know, sort of from Nuneaton down to Stratford. So people have very different responses to how you would describe things, and mirroring that, making sure that they understand that you're genuine, it's all from a place of, you know, improving their lives, is really important. It really helps make the process move along.
I definitely agree with Fraser. He's hit the nail on the head there. It really is. It's so important to mirror people's languages. It's just you being very, very careful, you know, about what you say and different items in the home. I mean, there's quite a famous saying that one man's trash is another man's treasure, that's so relevant in hoarding, that actually you could think something is broken and there's no use for it anymore, but that doesn't mean that that's not that person's most prized possession. So it's being really mindful of the way you speak about things and, you know, taking the time with every single item to say, do you want to keep this? Oh, are we getting rid of this? Are we donating this? Whatever it is. And it's always really good for us. We usually kind of agree certain rules. So sometimes, especially when we're a little bit further into support with people, so we know that any paperwork dated after this date, before this date, can go, type thing. So it's just being very mindful of how we approach it and the way we speak, particularly with their items and about their home. And one of the things we've recently started doing is we call our kind of hoarding support workers home coaches. So we're trying to eliminate that word. There have been discussions around whether we could look at adapting the name of the service. And I believe that's still ongoing because it's trying to find the right word that is respectful to people, but also shows to professionals what we do. So we are looking at kind of how we develop that and trying to use that really soft language with people. And as Fraser said, kind of when we initially go in, we'll do a bit of a how can we help plan. And we'll just say, you know, we're just here to have a chat. We're not here to do anything, force anything. Just here to get to know you and see what you want and how we can help you. So it's really kind of tailoring everything we say and do towards that individual.
Yeah, thank you. This is so interesting to hear about it all. I guess just kind of going back to how you would support someone, I'd be interested to hear of any kind of examples where things have really worked for people with different needs, perhaps. And I guess maybe kind of, obviously each journey is really different, but kind of if you were to get a referral, what would be the steps that you kind of take to kind of first support that individual? What does that first meeting look like? Things like that. But I do get that every journey is different, so that might be a difficult question to ask.
Yeah, so it's between Fraser and I, we have slightly different services, same aim, but just different kind of routes and stuff. So in Buckinghamshire, we have referrals from specific housing associations. So we would get those through from them. So we'd have all the information there. They know they're coming through to us. So our home coach would make initial contact and try and arrange what we'd call a how can we help you meeting. So just to literally come in, we try and make it really clear. We're here to help out within your home. We're not physically going to do anything on the first meeting unless you really want us to. We're here just to get to know you, have a chat about what P3 might be able to do to help you. And we'll kind of build a plan around that for ourselves to kind of work through. As we've discussed, that will be holistic. So it won't just be about the home and the items in it. We'd look at kind of all the different aspects of their life because, you know, if the hoarding behaviour is related to mental health, for example, we need to make sure they've got the right mental health support and, you know, various other kind of things there. So we'd sit down, kind of go through all that with them. And then what we would do is kind of agree a regular time slot that we're going to come round and support that individual if they're happy to do that. I have supported someone in the past where we literally went for a walk for about 4 or 5 months, every week, same time, 45-minute walk, before I was even able to go inside the home. It was just really to get to know that person, to make them comfortable with me. And like I said, we're not forcing anything. We can put the time and effort into helping that person get to that point where they are able to let someone in their home. That person is still open to us and has made absolutely incredible progress. But if you think of it from the other side, if we'd have gone, oh, we're a hoarding service and we need to come in your home and you're not letting us and just close them, where would they be now? So it's really important to obviously have that person-centered approach and take it as that person needs. And we're lucky enough at P3 to have the flexibility to do things like that. So then going forward, yeah, we'd have those kind of regular slots. We do about 2.5 hours a week. Averagely, depends on the individual and their needs. Some people are less attached and it's easy is not the right word, less distressing for them. And some people are very attached and we might be there for less time because it's very stressful for them. And then we'd basically just work through kind of goals with them. We'd initially ask them to decide where they might want to start, areas they wanted to organize or declutter. If they're not sure, we'd probably go from a risk point of view and suggest where we might need to start. And then we'd, you know, take it at their pace and start to declutter their home. Whilst in the background, we're also doing that holistic work. So do we need to refer to social care? Do we need to refer to mental health services and things like that?
It's good actually, because the Warwickshire Hoarding Service is a year old as of this month. So it's nice for us to sort of be reflective on the successes we've had and the times where it hasn't been quite successful. Thinking one of the largest success we've had actually was recently with an elderly woman who had retired a couple of years ago. She had been working for a charity for all of her life, and basically everything had got on top of her. She'd put so much into that she'd basically neglected herself. The property was severely hoarded. We're talking between a 7 and 9 on the clutter index, sort of every room. And it was just a case of someone whose physical health had caught up with them, and all the ideas. It's something you find working with hoarders, that there's a lot of ideas. I think it's something we have a million ideas, but nowhere to start. And then when you buy things for these things, they build up. So she had a lot of things that she wanted to do, but just wasn't able to. So when we did the assessment with her, we just went in, had a conversation. She's lived this amazing life. But in terms of accepting help from outside, that was where our sort of first barrier was, because she has supported so many people herself that the idea of accepting help was the first barrier. It was the first point in which she's like, actually, there are people who need it more than me. So we spent a lot of time just breaking it down with her and realizing actually, you know, everyone needs a hand eventually. It's not a case of, you know, taking something from someone else. We are a service that can support her in her situation. She'd been sleeping in the living room for the last 20 years. Her bedroom was inaccessible. And as of last week or so, we've managed to get that room completely cleared out. We've got it recarpeted, we've got it painted, cleaned, and we've got a hospital bed in there. So she's got a sleeping environment. And that was a really excellent win, because when we do our assessments, we like to take photos at the start of support. So when you compare the start and the end, you won't always have that. I think as a frontline worker, you shouldn't go in and expect rooms or houses to go from sort of a 7 to 9 on the clutter index. So that's sorry, I should talk. We use a clutter index is a sort of a universal directory for the amount of clutter that's in the room. If you Google it, there's lots of different images online of different rooms, and it's the universal term. The fire service use it as well to help explain how hoarded a room might be. Where the Warwickshire service, we specifically focus on between a 7 and 9. So it can be, when you work with people who hoard, you can go in with this mindset that, oh, I want to get everything down to a 1. No one's house is at a 1. My house isn't at a 1. It's unachievable. So I think having that mindset of saying, actually, a 5 is a win, a 6 is a win. These are still, it's still someone's house. It's still people's possessions. A lot of it might just be organizing things in a safe, you know, a safe environment, a safe way. With the woman we worked with, we were able to almost basically give her a brand new room back that she hadn't used for 20 years. And then it opens up storage, and then everything else sort of goes down. But we wouldn't have got there if we hadn't have spent that time building up that relationship, getting to know her properly, and getting her to a position where she was comfortable enough to let us support her and not feel that there are strangers in my house querying why I've got 18 secateurs. You know, it's all about that trust and that relationship. And I'd say that the problems, if we're talking about cases where we haven't had success, I'd say the times that spring to my mind is when potentially people have been less reluctant to allow us to sort of build that relationship. It is still a case of even coming around and saying hello once a week for a couple of months is building that relationship. But we would need, you know, engagement for that. And again, as I said before, for some people, it just isn't the right time. You know, hoarding is a very personal expression of trauma. And it does take that holistic, individualized approach to really understand someone and help them declutter in their own terms.
Thanks, Fraser. So yeah, it's really interesting. I kind of wanted to move on now to think about, I mean, we've touched on it a bit, but kind of the challenges in supporting people, but I guess also in being able to do your roles in terms of funding. I know we spoke when we first met about how, you know, sometimes the outcomes seem quite low But that's because it's a really complex issue that takes a kind of a long time to, like you said, to build up the relationship. So I wondered, yeah, if you wanted to speak a bit more on that, about kind of the challenges of this work.
Yeah, you've explained it perfectly there. So one of the biggest challenges we face at the moment is that funding stream. So P3 have done a great job. We've developed a hoarding offer. It's being sent out everywhere we can think of at the moment. But one of the difficulties is when we're looking at kind of commissioned funding, things from councils and government and stuff like that, it's not necessarily on the Housing First principles priority. So there's not necessarily a pot of funding specifically for hoarding support. And then so when we're out there kind of trying to source funding, as you've said, the outcomes don't necessarily reflect what other services might be able to provide. So for the money that people might be spending on this, the amount of people supported may seem relatively low compared to how other services work. But that's because we need the time to work with people. I mean, on our contract in Buckinghamshire, we work with up to five people over a year, which is tiny when you look at what other services might be doing. But it's because those people need that time and that dedication, and they need the long-term support. I mean, we have people in service for like two and a half years at the moment. So they started when we started, and we've still got them because they need that time. So it is quite difficult when we're looking at different funding streams that we might get, it's not the word, but be unsuccessful because perhaps other people are showing more quantitative outcomes, whereas our qualitative outcomes would be, you know, still very rich, and the holistic outcome for the service that we'd be providing would be huge. And there's lots of information. We've done lots of work, as Fraser said, with the fire services. The cost saving implications of having hoarding support services is huge. You unfortunately see people going through eviction, going to court. That's tens of thousands of pounds spent by housing associations that could be put into a holistic support service where it's much, you know, I can't think of the word. For the individual, you know, that's a completely different experience. You know, it's a new form of trauma having to go through all of that. And obviously the cost implications of fires and things like that. And unfortunately, we do see deaths due to hoarded homes. So the evidence is out there. It's just, you know, finding the right places. And like we said, we've got hoarding services popping up. We've got new services coming, and that's brilliant because people are recognizing how important it is. But that is, you know, one of the challenges that we have faced as a charity trying to kind of expand.
Yeah, no, it's very true. Like I said, we're talking about a disorder that affects sort of 5% of the UK population. That's more than bipolar and schizophrenia combined. It's a very big thing that costs a lot of money for housing. It costs a lot of money for social care. But we are sort of a preemptive measure as much as anything. So there is a case, you know, I mean, social care is being cut back so significantly that we're not as if we're the only service providing something that needs, you know, appropriate funding. But we are a preemptive support service that could save, you know, a lot of money generally. In the Warwickshire service, we work with, when we launched it, the idea was 10 people over the year. We have worked with probably just over double that. And it's not, it's largely because after a few months, you know, we talk about how we need this time to build relationships and things. Funding is then questioned to a point of, oh, well, you know, the house might be at this state, so do we need to continue funding? And that's when the support would have to get withdrawn, and that's when you're going to get people rehoarding. So it is something that needs to be understood as a long-term process. We've had training with lots of different organisations who talk about the support they've offered, and it is for a year, 2 years. It is a long-standing process. You are trying to really help people change habits, and you just can't change them overnight. So yeah, having sort of a solid funding that would mean we could set, you know, work with someone for a year, year and a half, as long as we feel that it takes, yeah, would be ideal. But until hoarding is recognized potentially a little bit more, I think that's always going to be a battle that we'll face.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's all about really raising awareness, and I think, you know, the fact that it is kind of recognized as its own mental health disorder, I didn't know that, and I think that really needs to be put out there. We wouldn't just withdraw support for someone that had a mental health need because of funding. Well, maybe we would, but yeah, we need to kind of see, like you said, see hoarding as its own, it is its own disorder. You say it affects 5% of the population, which is absolutely huge. So yeah, I think just, yeah, your work that you're doing is absolutely brilliant. I just wish that, I guess, there was more of it and more funding available for people, because like you said, people can, there's deaths involved in this, you know, there's people that end up homeless because of their hoarding. So it really is something that needs funding pumped into it.
It's something that if you speak to people in the fire service, it's something that they're very hot on, pardon the pun, but because they see so many sort of hoarder related incidents. I was reading an article about, it was the fire service in London, and they had, it was 1,000, over 1,000 hoarder related fires with 10 deaths, and that's just last year, and that's just in London. So if you were to take it to a wider scale, it's so much more of a problem than you realize. It stops people from entering. You know, if you have a health emergency and you can't get a stretcher into the property, you know, there are lots of different ways that it can really, really be so damaging to people and harmful.
Yeah. So unfortunately, I think that's all we've got time for today. But thank you so much for coming and speaking with me today. It's been really useful to understand the reasons why someone might hoard, and then think about kind of some of the practical ways that frontline workers can support individuals. But yes, thank you so much, Hannah and Fraser, for your time.
Thanks for listening. To keep up to date with the latest goings on at HomelessLink, please follow us on Twitter at HomelessLink. If you're interested in training and development opportunities for yourself, your team, or your organisation, get in touch by emailing training@homelesslink.org.uk. We have a range of courses that help staff and organisations develop the skills needed to tackle current issues and improve services.